Welcome to another episode of Go, Go, Grow. This is the coaching style podcast that helps business owners and entrepreneurs grow their businesses. If you're looking to do that, you are in the right place. I have expert guests join me each week. And today I have Joe Jameson. And Joe's going to share with you a unique perspective. He actually has built his business on his passion. And I know so many of you out there have done the same. So let me give him a proper introduction. Joe is the founder of Visitable. And I have the pleasure of calling him one of my clients. So Joe, welcome to Go, Go, Grow.
Thank you, Michelle. It's so great to be here with you.
Awesome. So one of the things that I love about Joe and so many of the entrepreneurs that I talk to is you start your business because something sparks you. You have a passion and you want to share that passion. So Joe, can you give us some insight into what type of organization, what kind of business Visitable is and what motivated you to start it?
Absolutely. I'll first give a high-level overview of what Visitable is trying to achieve. Visitable is really trying to change the way the world views disability. And what I mean by that is a lot of times people think about disability from the lens of ADA compliance and sometimes don't view people with disabilities as people, but rather, oh, this could be potentially a lawsuit or a complaint or, you know, a bad experience. And it creates this more outlook that's more reactive and punitive. And we'll hear things like, oh, well, we'll make a change when we see a person with a disability, or we don't have any problems because we don't get any complaints. And, you know, it's kind of creates this chicken and the egg scenario, you know, where, of course, people with disabilities aren't going to be coming to an establishment. And if they're not there, there's not going to be any complaints. If the organization doesn't proactively make an effort to be more inclusive and welcoming and accommodating to those with disabilities. So we're really trying to help people think about disability and accessibility in a more proactive and positive light. And we do that through asynchronous disability inclusion and awareness training, coupled with an advocate certification program that we've created for organizations. We're hoping with that certification to create more motivation for disability awareness, more accountability in terms of making sure an entire organization is trained, and to make a statement that disability isn't just a charity case that needs donations, but this is something that can differentiate an organization to help them recruit and retain their clients, employees, and any other stakeholders that they care about in their organization. And I founded the company back in 2019 because my father has used a wheelchair for my entire life. And growing up, I noticed how, you know, it wasn't just about ramps and elevators. But, you know, people were treating my dad differently than the rest of my family. There were times where we would go places and people would ignore him and only speak to me. There were certain times where people would ask intrusive questions that were a little bit too personal and irrelevant to the task at hand. Or at times just people would use verbiage that was outdated and offensive and they just didn't know any better. And I thought that, you know, these people weren't all bad people. They all didn't have bad intentions. They just didn't know what they didn't know. But regardless of the intentions of how good a person that was, my family, myself, my dad, and the rest of us, you know, often felt excluded and unwelcome in those scenarios. So Visitable is really, really my passion based on those experiences to try to create better experiences, to give organizations and employees the tools to create better experiences for people with disabilities to live, work, play, and thrive. And we're really passionate about creating genuine, authentic training where people can actually empathize and create a more culture of empathy rather than just based on compliance or doing something reactively.
That's definitely something that is based in passion and filling a need, because you're absolutely right. So many people don't realize that just like every other aspect of our lives, verbiage changes. The way people want to be interacted with changes. The way women, think back to the 60s and 70s, the women's feminist revolution. Women wanted to be seen different. Now, I don't see myself as a feminist. I see myself as equal in every way to everyone else out there. I don't like to see differences pointed out. I want to see us all treated as equals. I'm going to assume that's how the disabled community wants to be seen. They want to have the same opportunity to enjoy and experience everything life has to offer the same as everyone else.
Absolutely. It's not about, you know, calling someone special or, you know, trying to give someone special attention, but giving people the same access, independence, and opportunities. Those are the three things I'm really passionate about creating more of for people with disabilities. Equal access, equal independence, and equal opportunities. And by creating, you know, situations where accessibility is thought of proactively ahead of time and there are options available and flexibility incorporated, things like that, that's going to allow those three things to be equal and to allow people with disabilities to be on the same playing field, you know, and enjoy the same opportunities as everyone else.
So I always find it interesting when I talk to entrepreneurs, and you've been in business now for five plus years. I always want to say, okay, what brought you into entrepreneurship? Because, you know, it's always, I mean, it's a big decision in life, whether you kind of happen upon starting your own business or if it's intentional. And you shared with me 2019 as part of your capstone course at UVA. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. So I did the entrepreneurship minor at the University of Virginia. Fun fact, I didn't get into the business school. So the entrepreneurship minor was a way for me to still get in front of those commerce school, business school professors and like really look, you know, learn from them being like some of the greatest professors at the University of Virginia. And so I was able to take the entrepreneurship minor and the capstone course was called Launch. And it was the whole goal of it was to create your own business. And they started out by saying, if you start a company, you need to pick something that you're passionate about, which kind of goes to the main topic of this podcast episode. They basically just said, if you want to start a business, you need to pick something that you can keep with you. That's something that can get you up in the morning. And they started having us think about, you know, big world problems and thinking about what we're actually passionate about. And at that point, it became pretty much a no-brainer that I knew this problem, like the back of my hand, the problem of accessibility, the world not being accessible for my family and my dad and all of us. And it came down to how do I apply this to the business world in a way that can create a sustainable, scalable business. And that's where they had us going out in the community and just seeing what we were able to do. In this case, I had a lot of knowledge on how to make something more wheelchair accessible, which we've grown since then. But at the moment, I was going to the downtown mall of Charlottesville and just knocking on doors and seeing if I could get anyone to be open to any like, you know, feedback or consultation for their wheelchair accessibility, and got a lot of no's.
we all do.
And then COVID hit and
no more knocking.
No knocking then. So after that, I mean, it just became a process of becoming more comfortable and reaching out to bigger organizations and agencies and growing in a way to incorporate all disabilities, to incorporate more services, expanding, focusing, and eventually coming to a product that I believe really is the sustainable and scalable product, which is this training that I'm excited about. And also something I was the most passionate about after exploring all the services, I really wanted to focus on mindset and attitude. And that's how I really decided on training. And from here, I'm not going to say I have all my markets perfectly defined yet, as you know, Michelle, but
we're working on that, Joe. We're working on that.
But maybe that was a bigger answer than you were hoping for, but that's kind of
well, there's
how we got to.
there's three things there that you brought up that I kind of want to unpack. So the first one is going to be just, what are we talking about scope wise? Because people may say, okay, well, how big of a community are we talking about? First of all, let's be very, very clear here. The disabled community is the largest minority group in the U.S. Yes, it is considered a minority group. So when you're talking about things like DEAI, when organizations have a DEI framework, is it a DEAI framework, A being accessibility? So largest minority group in the U.S., 28.7 is the most recent CDC number. And how many million is that?
That's more than 70 million.
CDC does have 70 plus million on their website. And 2 points about that. Over the last, I think, 30 some years, that number's grown. I think it's 64%.
Sounds right. You're right. Yeah.
Okay. And what is the key point that you always add?
The only minority group that anyone can join at any time. I've heard DEI consultants tell me and others that disability might be one of the best places to start a DEAI journey because of the relatability, the fact that anyone can grasp that the next day they could have an accident and have a disability. Or right. Most likely someone in their family or someone that they know or someone in their friend group has a disability. And I heard someone tell it to me bluntly. I don't like to say this bluntly, but I'll quote them so it's not me saying it directly. They said, if someone says they have never met a person with a disability, they're probably wrong because there's so many disabilities that are invisible, you know, yeah, that you won't know, that are non-apparent.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. Absolutely. You mentioned your father's paraplegic. He's been in a wheelchair. So someone might readily see him in passing and say, okay, he is a disabled person. If somebody's walking with a red-tipped white cane, they may say, okay, he or she is a disabled person. If someone is neurodivergent, they may not know that. Mm-hmm. If somebody is unable to live on their own, if they're unable to take care of themselves, they may not know that. That's disabled. Give the audience some other ideas of why this is so prevalent that they may not know. What are some of the other categories that we need to be aware of and sensitive to so that we can be inclusive and accommodating?
Yes, absolutely. I'm going to pull up how we break it down in our training. There's a million ways. I tell people this all the time. I've heard this broken down a million ways. I try to take a more social model of disability, if that makes sense, and like really hearing how people identify themselves and applying that. So one that's very obvious is the mobility side of things. We group mobility, body structure, and dexterity into one section. Dexterity would be using hands, and that affects things like opening doorknobs and twisting your wrist and grasping and things like that, and silverware and all these things. You know, body structure could be a little person, so someone with dwarfism needing lower reach heights for accessibility, and mobility is more graspable, wheelchair user, someone that uses a cane, someone that uses a walker, that kind of thing. There's also a big category of non-apparent disabilities. That includes mental health illnesses. It includes, well, it doesn't traditionally include in a disability definition, but we like to include accessibility and accommodations when it comes to our training. So there's mental health aspects. There is non-apparent disabilities that dips into neurodivergence. It could look into developmental disabilities, learning disabilities, things like ADHD and dyslexia and things like that. There are speech disabilities. It could be someone with Tourette syndrome. It could be someone with a lisp. So many different types. There's neurodivergence, which includes things like autism, Down syndrome, dementia, and much more. You don't want to isolate different types of disabilities because they all exist simultaneously, and there are different degrees and different combinations. But there are so many types of disabilities that you may never know exist. And sometimes that means that people might request an accommodation. And when they do that, sometimes they're met with maybe defensiveness or just a lack of awareness of why an accommodation would be needed. And they assume that there has to be some type of physical appearance for that accommodation. And it creates this difficulty, both employment and on the, you know, customer facing side. So it's important to trust people with the symptoms that they're going through, with the accommodations that they need. That's one of the big things that we have in our training for people to take away.
Absolutely. And one of the, I think, most impactful pieces that I've seen that you've prepared is the 7 golden rules of disability inclusion. And it's just a 1-page document, and it really highlights 7 things that they seem to be common sense, but they're not. And a lot of it are things that have evolved over time. And again, if it's something that you've not had a lot of personal interactions with someone on a regular basis that has had needed some of these accommodations or has been in that disabled community, you may not even be aware that the words you've been using are considered offensive by a lot of people. Or maybe your sincere offer to help is misplaced. So let's pop that up for just a few moments here. And can you kind of highlight what those 7 golden rules are that you've come up with?
Absolutely. So golden rule number 1 is practicing respectful behavior matters. This should be a common sense golden rule, but it's just to make sure that everyone, regardless of disability or not, is treated with respect and not singled out and not treated rudely or anything like that. Mm-hmm. The second golden rule we talk about is positive language makes a positive difference. As Michelle highlighted before, verbiage and self-identification is changing all the time. And it's important to be aware of what the most up-to-date verbiage is to be respectful of people's preferences. 3 is validate before assuming. This is the point I was just talking about with not necessarily assuming because someone looks a certain way or that you grew up thinking a certain thing was how it's supposed to be done, that everyone wants it that way or everyone needs help, right? It's important to ask before assuming someone needs help or before assuming that you doing something is going to be helpful. It could potentially, you know, mess up a routine or, yes, you know, your help might not be wanted at all. Rule 4 is give everybody a seat at the table. This is especially important. One of the things I mentioned I'm passionate about is giving people with disabilities more opportunities. People with disabilities, you know, are extremely valuable employees, and making them be at the table as employees, as customers, as a feedback mechanism on the board, on the volunteer board, whatever it might be, having them be part of the decision-making processes and planning can really make experiences better for not just people with disabilities, but everyone. And rule 5 is strive for universal design. So universal design is basically accessibility on steroids. The idea of universal design is that something, whether it's a product, a space, digital or physical, anything, it works for as many people as possible, including people with and without disabilities. A simple example could be a curbside pickup during the COVID-19. It was extremely helpful, you're right, for people that were, you know, very susceptible to getting sick and having really bad symptoms during COVID-19. But it was also really helpful for people with mobility challenges and disabilities to not have to get out of the car. 6th golden rule is controlling what you can. So, you know, this is in recognition that not everyone has the power to install an elevator. We know that. And there's so many different regulations and, you know, there might be an architectural review board and a city policy and, you know, so many different bureaucracy red tape sometimes. But the thing is, the important thing is to make progress. It might be that you start the conversation with the architectural review board. It might be if you're a frontline staff member that you're just pulling up chairs to tables outside of the use of a meeting room or something so that people can navigate the space more easily. Anyone in any position or any role can do something to create a more accessible environment. Rule number 7 is to be proactive. This is one of the big parts of what Visible is trying to accomplish, as I mentioned in my intro. Being proactive means that you are thinking ahead about accessibility. You're not waiting till a problem comes up. You're asking about accommodations ahead of time. You're allowing yourself to give visitors the opportunity to prepare, to read information, to request accommodations. When they're not on the spot, when they're not on, you know, during their visit, they can actually enjoy that visit because everything was taken care of ahead of time. And those are the 7 golden rules of disability inclusion.
Very nicely presented. I mean, think about it. If you were having guests in your home, what do you do before then? Of course, yes, you clean up a little bit and, you know, make sure they have, you know, if you're having overnight guests, you're going to make sure they have clean linens and whatnot. But if you're preparing a meal and you know that one of them has an allergy or one of them, you know, only eats specific things, you're going to ask them, okay, I'm going to be preparing dinner. Do you have any specifications? Or, you know, you're going to ask other things about how can I best prepare for you to enjoy your visit to my home? It's the same thing.
Michelle, you brought up one thing that I think I forgot to mention before. Chronic illnesses are a big part of accessibility and accommodations. When you were asking about the different types of groups within the disabled community, there are thousands, if not more, of different types of chronic illnesses that need accessibility and accommodations. They might use mobility aids or different type of equipment.
Yeah.
And things like dietary restrictions are big, right, for people. Chronic illnesses, there are people that have religious affiliations that affect dietary restrictions.
Yeah.
You reminded me that that's also a crucial part of accommodating and also that chronic illnesses should be included within that broad scope, in my opinion, of non-apparent disabilities and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And not saying that cat allergies are a disability, but my mother came to visit and she's allergic to cats. She was staying for a week. I have 7 cats. I bought her an air filter for her room. I would do it for a guest. If I'm a business owner, I'm going to do it for my customers, clients, visitors, employees. That's what you do. That's what you do. You're a good human. Be a good human.
Absolutely. It's just as simple as that. And then sometimes it's like, wow, when you break it down like that, it's like, wow, how do I have a business? Right. But it comes down to like, you know, making sure people understand, like a reminder, this is what takes being a good human, what it takes. And then here are some of the things that where it goes wrong when you apply it to people with disabilities. And here are some best practices to counteract that. And that's kind of how we approach that conversation, if that helps at all.
So before you and I met, and I was referred to you as that's how I get most of my clients' referrals, by a mutual friend, Dasha. She was my co-host for 1. And you're also one of her clients for other expertise. Mm-hmm. She and I were talking and she's like, I think you could probably help Joe, but I'm not sure. Let's talk this through. And she said, okay, well he wants to be able to scale. He's looking for more customers. I'm like, okay, well, let's work this through. And I said, okay, so he wants more customers. Okay. So what does he offer the customers? Disability inclusion training. Okay. So what are the customers' goals? Well, you know, she's giving me all these different things. And I said, no, the customer's goal is to make more money. So how does what Joe offers make the clients more money? It helps them bring more guests, more clients, more customers. It helps cement those relationships. It helps word of mouth, because if you are in any group, I don't care if you're in a fraternal organization, if you have a big old family, if you're a first responder or whatever the case may be, if you are in a minority group, you tell people when you have a good experience, especially if you need accommodations. So if your organization goes through a disability inclusion and gets that certification, you can proudly advertise, hey, our team members know how to properly accommodate and include and make accessible our product, service, and location for the disabled community. That's going to get you more business. So part of the focus of this podcast episode featuring my friend and client, Joe, is to share how to start a business based on your passion, how to address your clients' needs by feeding your passion. And we went through that painful exercise at the beginning, didn't we?
Yeah.
Are you still having flashbacks from that, Joe?
Yeah, I feel like we need to do it again. Me and Dasha were talking about it.
Yeah, we talked about going back to that ICP examination. Who is your customer? But the third thing, Joe, the last thing I wanted to really bring out for the audience. So you've started your business on your passion. Clearly, this is something near and dear to you, and you want to be an advocate. In fact, you're just like my tagline is build, train, grow, launch, coach, scale. Yours is educate, advocate, empower.
Yes.
Who you are, that's what you do. And it's so needed out there. And one of the things that that we've talked about is expanding the opportunities that you've already had to advocate on a more public setting. I mean, you've already done conference speaking and speaking to community groups and state and local authorities. And I mean, your clients are quite a few government entities, law enforcement, travel and tourism, quite a few major hotel chains. So if you're looking for someone who can speak on an expert basis to disability inclusion, Joe's your person. But Joe, sometimes passion's not enough, right?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So when sometimes passion isn't enough, how did you get what you needed to launch and grow your business? That's what the listeners want to know. How do I grow my business based on my passion?
Yeah. I mean, I am a first-time founder, so I might be slower to learn than others. And I don't think my knowledge was where it needed to be to get to where I wanted to go as fast as I wanted to go, but that's okay. We're getting there. And I think everyone applies. It's important to be patient and keep pushing. You know, I've had people tell me no when to quit, and I think that's important too. But it's also important to almost always be in that mindset of, you know, stick with it. You know, you can see the light of the tunnel at the other side. I think that's probably the first thing I'd say. But, you know, I think one of the biggest things that I learned is like really talking to the customer makes all the difference. I don't think anything is more important than that. Like, you know, you can go and make your product, but here's the thing, like you can do your products in iterations. I've had so many people educate me on that, and it's so true. You want to get a product that's good enough to get in front of a customer to get feedback, and you don't have to charge a lot at first. But when it's time to pay the bills, you know, having some type of like part-time job or something to start out with, working your way up in this iterative process really helped me, like not trying so hard to get a perfect product at first. But like going to talk to a bunch of customers, I was basically selling it for nothing, right? Like, I wasn't making enough to support just by the business alone at first. I kind of did the bootstrapping route too, if that means anything to anyone, but
it probably means something to everybody watching.
Yes. But also that's where my perspective is coming from. As I continued growing and I made that next iteration, it was really just like, how can I get that next iteration? At that point, you can start charging more. And the one thing that I learned, maybe the thing that I wasn't really well equipped to do, was pricing. Pricing is extremely difficult. And I think that first time entrepreneurs especially are always going to undervalue their pricing. And I know a lot of organizations doing free services out there. And sometimes, and I've had the discussion with many different professionals, sometimes just the attitude is different when you charge what you're actually worth. So that was my biggest learning curve of like, I was definitely undervaluing myself at first.
Yeah.
I haven't figured it all out yet, but I think the thing I have figured out is it's all about talking to the customer and having an iterative process where it's not about having everything perfect at first, but it's about having something that's good enough that you can go to customers and get feedback and continue to improve and figure out who your best customer is.
You've got the nail on the head there. That minimum viable product, that MVP to get it out there. And you may not know exactly what your customer wants. You may think that you've got a solution to their problem, but you may be close, but no cigar. And, this is not horseshoes. You're not going to get a ringer. So you need to go out there and see how close your solution is to what they need. And you are going to have to pivot, if not today, then tomorrow. So be proactive and prepared for that. And I absolutely agree with you. So when you get out there and you realize that I need to bring in help because, wow, I don't know SEO. Wow, I don't know thought leadership. Wow, I don't know lead generation. Wow, I don't know the ICP process. You know, bring in a coach for that. Bring in a consultant or, get some additional training. You mentioned UVA and their entrepreneurship program. I went to University of Georgia for my MBA. They had a fantastic entrepreneurship program. Director of that program went to University of Kennesaw University in Kennesaw, Georgia. Fantastic man there. I don't think he's there anymore. My undergrad was John Ahero University, and that is that entrepreneurship department is now led by I believe Dr. David Clifford, who I went to school with. So go to your schools and universities near you. Take a few courses. Go to your small business administration or small business development centers in your local area. Learn the foundation of what you don't know. So, you know, when you hire that support, you can at least speak that language. Don't just say, okay, tell me what I need to do. You need to understand what you're being coached to do so that you can make a smart decision, but you don't know everything. You shouldn't do everything.
Yeah. I also liked what you said about pivoting too. Just to share a personal example, I started with a whole gambit of services of providing assessments, providing a database of accessibility information, providing, you know, linking, finding, recruiting, and actually like implementing a process of local secret shoppers or mystery guests with disabilities to go into an establishment, and creating a report with all of that, creating a website listing and doing a training. And talking about that, like the passion was, I could do any of these things. I'm passionate about any of these things. And it became a point where as I did better, I couldn't keep up with it sustainability wise. Yeah. Like I couldn't scale it at the level of quality that I wanted to do. So it became a task of picking what I was most passionate about, and something that I really felt the most passionate about, scaling. And at that point, I decided that training and my affected mindset and attitude, which affected everything else of the services that I was doing. If people don't have the right mindset, it's just another accessibility assessment report sitting on a shelf and no one's going to look at it. So I just wanted to, yes, I wanted to agree with the pivoting too and focus. Mm-hmm. Focus is big too. You can't do everything for everyone, especially when starting out. Like there's an opportunity that I might expand back out later. But for now, I really feel good about the fact that I chose something that, one, I was passionate about, and two, that I can actually work to scale.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Become an expert, a thought leader, an impact on one area. Really, I hate to use the word perfect because nothing is ever perfect, but really emphasize making that the way it needs to be. And then, first of all, you have a built-in customer base for your next product or service. But anything you do after that is going to be that much easier because you've already proven the market and the value. So I think you're in good shape with that intentional decision to scale back before you can scale up. That's good.
Right.
But I do want to kind of wrap things up with sharing a few other places that anyone that's watching can get some additional value from the resources that you've already created. Your website is very rich, and that's visitable.io. We will share that in the show notes. It is very rich with resources such as blogs, a nice spread of topics relating to not just inclusion, accessibility, accommodation, but also compliance and from the HR management side. So there's just a wealth of information there. You put out a newsletter. You can sign up for Visitable's newsletter on his website. We will include your email on the show notes as well. And if you would like your own copy of the 7 Golden Rules and you email Joe and ask sweetly, he will be happy to send you a copy. If you are any type of organization, whether you're a for-profit company, a nonprofit company, a government organization, a civic organization, a religious organization, whatever type of organization, if you would like to have someone speak with passion about disability inclusion, please contact Joe. He will share information. He will share passion. He will share spirit, and he will share resources. Does that kind of sum it up, Joe?
Yes, absolutely. And if we also provide some helpful reminders on social media too, if anyone would like to follow us there, we are posting more frequently than doing a newsletter. So in case people want more frequent, like, you know, quotes and stats and stuff like that, we're on top of that social media too.
Absolutely. And we'll include all of your links and resources and whatnot. And of course, he's available for any other type of media appearances. He really wants to get the word out because this is such an important show. Anything else you'd like to share, Joe?
I don't think so, but thank you. And yeah, anyone, feel free to reach out at any time. I'm happy to share more thoughts and be assistance any way I can. Really grateful for the opportunity to be here with you, Michelle, and share some thoughts on this important topic.
Absolutely. Well, thank you all for watching. This has been another exciting episode of Go, Go, Grow with Joe Jameson and Visitable. I hope you enjoy the next episode coming up, and please do share it with another entrepreneur, colleague, or friend that can find value in scaling their business. Check out the show notes, check out the resources, and have a great day growing your business.